Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. The Gaza peace plan, is it the beginning of the end, or is it deja vu all over again? Also, the European elites have a deadly case of war fever. Will they succeed in getting Trump on board? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we cross to Mark Sloboda. He's an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Mark. Mark, we have the Trump peace plan in process, okay? I mean, who knows? It could events could arise over the next few hours that could take it in a different direction. Hamas agreed, but said, we agree, but the Israelis have said, we've agreed, but. So there's a lot of ambiguity going on right now. But there's one thing that is for sure is the destruction of Gaza and its people continue. What is at stake here? What is at stake here for the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu? And more importantly, what is at stake here for Donald Trump?
Okay, so, well, first of all, I think what needs to be said is what is at stake for the Palestinian people, and that is their continued survival as a nation. Potentially, right, what potentially lies at the end of the process is the recognition of a Palestinian state. And it has to be said that the majority of the world already recognizes a Palestinian state, including Russia and China, and now several European states. But the recognition alone doesn't mean anything. For Benjamin Netanyahu, I mean, his vision of a greater Israel and his political career hangs in the balance, because the mood in the Israeli political sphere within his own cabinet and within the greater population is of no surrender. I mean, they've been told.
Well, no compromise.
No compromise. They've been told, the Israeli people have polled repeatedly in support of ethnic cleansing and the wiping out of the Palestinian people. So they've gone to such an extreme that any walk back from that would be seen and is openly said to be weakness by his own far-right ministers. For Donald Trump, it's his posturing as a peacemaker. I would say that's the only thing that's really on the block for him. He doesn't really lose anything if the Palestinian people are wiped out or if Netanyahu's political career suffers. So he's the one, but he's also the one trying to, shall we say, force a plan with really childish threats of raining death and destruction on the Palestinian people. And it's not even his plan. This is the thing. This is largely an Arab plan that was presented back in the Blinken-Sullivan administration and was ignored at the time. The Arab states complain that it's been watered down a bit. And Tony Blair has been interjected in the colonial ruling class over Palestine. But there's so many things in this deal that Israel will never accept that I expect that there will probably be a temporary success for a hostage exchange on both sides, but then it will collapse as it always does.
Yeah, but George, that's the problem. You know, in my introduction, we had deja vu all over again. And that's, you know, I mean, we don't have to look too far back. The negotiations with Iran was a ruse. One would even claim that the first Trump ceasefire at the beginning of his administration was a ruse. We could bring that to the Istanbul negotiations, where in the middle of negotiations, Russia's nuclear installations were attacked. So, I mean, I don't put any stock into this. I do tend to agree with Mark is that we could see a very short moment where there could be an exchange of hostages. For what gain Hamas gets from that, I don't know. But the Israelis are all in on this. They've done what they've done, and there's no reverse gear for this. They're going just to continue. I tend to think Trump wants to say, I did my best, and he wants to walk away from it. And the fact that Jared Kushner is involved in this and Steve Witkoff, which Very few people have any confidence in him anymore whatsoever. So, I mean, this could be just a flash in the pan, George.
Well, it could be, but the problem is that it's now been spelled out. There are the 20 points that they're there. It's been published by the White House. Trump's name is attached to it. So this is the Trump peace plan. And there are clear, you know, parts of the plan which is spelled out. Israel will not annex Gaza. No one will be forced to leave Gaza against their will. So it's there in the plan. So this is now associated with him. And I think that's a little different from the negotiations with Iran, because nothing was actually ever spelled out. We were just simply trying to go by the various hints and rumors about what was being discussed among the negotiators. So in this case, it is actually there spelled out. That doesn't mean that it's going to happen. I mean, I think that there will be an exchange of the hostages and prisoners. I think that is going to go ahead. But then the question is, will Israel do what it always does, which is to say, oh, we can't. I mean, the way this plan is framed, Israel withdraws as long as certain standards have been met.
In other words, as they define it.
Because Israel will decide whether Hamas has really disarmed, and therefore that Hamas really is no longer a serious military force. So that's an issue. But the one aspect of it that is a little different from previous agreements is that everybody else is now involved in this. This isn't just simply a bilateral thing between Israel and the Palestinians, as Oslo was, in which case Israel could just simply do whatever it wants. Now we've got the United States is involved. Trump is supposed to be the chairman of the board that's going to be overseeing the running of Gaza. And of course, all the other Arab states are involved. So it's going to be a little tricky for Israel just simply to walk away and say, well, that's it. We're just going ahead with the war. It might happen, but it's not going to be that easy for Israel.
I'm not sure. I don't think it's going to be very difficult at all. I mean, the fact that Israel has been behaving with impunity for the last 2 years when it comes to Gaza, I mean, why would they stop acting with impunity? The Saudis are going to get angry with the Israelis, the Qataris are going to get angry, the Egyptians are going to get angry, Trump get angry. I see a process here. It's not going to be reversed. This is
but Trump
window
has,
dressing.
But Trump has got angry. I mean, he humiliated.
Yeah, but actions are more important.
But he humiliated Netanyahu. Nobody has done that before. He made Netanyahu.
Okay. As I started the program, we're in the middle of something, so it's difficult to say one way or another. But I get your point, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, people can get mad. I mean, but they're not on the ground, right? The Israeli military is on the ground. The Israeli Defense Force is on the ground. They are expected, as part of this process, to withdraw to the lines before their latest offensive eventually, which is only
eventually.
Which is only control of 70% of the Gaza Strip. That's what they're supposed to withdraw to. There's barely a building left standing in Gaza, right? There are dozens of children dying every day of starvation. 800,000 people have been driven into what are effectively concentration camps. The truth is that Hamas is in a very bad situation, simply because the Palestinian people are, you know, on the brink. At this point, let's be honest about this. And they, you know, exist out of the Palestinian people of Gaza. If they don't want to see their people wiped out completely, they've got very little leverage at this point. And the things, of course, is that this is supposed to end in a two-state solution. Israel will never accept that. There's also supposed to eventually be Muslim peacekeepers on the ground in Gaza. The Indonesians have been floated. Israel will never accept this. So somewhere down the line, they will yell, Hamas, terrorists, and then they'll resume operations and everything else will go up in smoke. And because everyone has accepted the, you know, ability of Israel to do this and then act with impunity before, they'll be able to do it into the future. They'll continue it to a certain point until, you know, like, hostages are exchanged on both sides. They've promised to deliver some nearly 2,000 Palestinian hostages that the Israeli regime has taken to the Palestinian side. So that's what
Mark, I mean, just as a point of order here, the release of these Palestinian prisoners to the West Bank, to Gaza, I mean, going from a prison to even the West Bank now, or to Gaza, I'm not really sure what kind of option that is, okay?
And it has to be said that the Israeli cabinet of Netanyahu is crying openly for the annexation of the West Bank as well.
Well, George, I mean, again, going back to my first question, is it possible all of this is just a ruse? We get the hostages back and we continue this genocidal campaign. I mean, given if the past is prelude, I think I have an argument to make here, George.
I don't think so, because I think that Trump is now associated with this plan. This is Trump's plan. Trump is not committed to greater Israel.
Trump is associated with this. But Trump is also associated with Israel's behavior in Gaza also.
Well, he's associated with that. But again, Trump is not committed to greater Israel. Yes, of course, the Israeli, that's what Israel, we know what Israel wants. The question is whether Israel will get what it wants. Trump has now said that this is going to be his plan, his baby. He's committed to it. If he really follows through on this, okay, I mean, and I'm not saying that certainly, but if he follows through on this, then Israel will have to behave. Israel, I mean, the fact is that Trump has now done, he obviously was very unhappy about that attack on Qatar. He's made a lot of steps to humiliate Israel. I mean, he issued that essentially a remarkable kind of blanket security guarantee to Qatar. He made Netanyahu make that phone call to Qatar and apologize. And he didn't allow Netanyahu to walk away and say, oh, I only apologize for the killing of a security guard. He issued the statement of Netanyahu, said, oh, I really apologize for violating Qatari security. That indicates that Trump is committed to this. I mean, you know, I'm going to say I know exactly what's going to happen, but this is a little different from previous deals, because this is his plan. And if he then just simply says, oh, okay, BB, do whatever you want, then that's it. I mean, he's absolutely looks humiliated and he's done for.
Okay. I think there's a lot of humiliation that's going to go around here. Mark, before we go to the break.
Yeah, just two words connected there together, Trump and commitment. They're kind of oxymoronic. They have absolutely nothing to do with each other. And all it takes is another Trump post 15 minutes from now, and his position will completely change. Trump.
All right, gentlemen, nothing is going to be resolved here because it's still in process here. Okay, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. Mark, let's change gears a little bit here. Something all three of us watch very, very closely is this war fever in Europe, okay? And it gets ever so sophisticated or comical. I'm not really sure which one to stress here. And George, you are in Budapest. Are you on a drone alert right now? Okay, Mark, you take it first.
Well, I don't know if George is on a drone alert, but it seems that most of Europe, the European people, have been driven by the European political elite and the media into a type of Russophobic, Cold War era McCarthyite frenzy. I've seen videos of French people collecting emergency kits for their houses, and the Danish running on canned mackerel in stores because they're terrified that Russian drones that appear and disappear mysteriously, never actually doing anything, but being hyped up is, you know, it is creating a Cold War era. And Maria Zakharova, the Russian foreign ministry spokeswoman, has said that it's not a Cold War. It's a fiery war that's going on right now. The Polish prime minister, Donald Tusk, says the war in Ukraine is our war. It's a new kind of war, but it's our war. And the French government of Macron, using this drone scare as a pretext, has now begun a campaign of piracy in international waters, detaining ships, international ships, carrying Russian oil, because he says that the intent is to disrupt the business model, that they don't actually have to impound them. They don't have to have any evidence, anything. They'll just stop them, detain them for a week or two and cause all kinds of delays and insurance problems. And now that will put the ball back in Russia's court. What does Russia do in response?
Okay, well, George, I mean, if it's, to use Mark's words, it's our war. It's Europe's war. Why? Where are all the demonstrations? You know, where's the war fever on the street? I mean, if this is such a threat, people would, you know, get riled up and say, you know, we need to send troops to Ukraine. We need to increase defense spending. Oh, no, they're doing just the opposite. Anyone that is a any politician that's pro-Ukraine, pro-interventionist, they lose at the polls. How do you explain that, George?
It really is quite remarkable, because this whole, the Russophobia, war fever, this is make or break. You know, if we fail in Ukraine, then, you know, we're all going to be eating borscht and drinking vodka.
Yeah, but I thought Europe wasn't a combatant. I thought it wasn't.
Exactly that. But this is said by the European elites. But they're simply, among the public, there is no support whatsoever for going to war against Russia, and no support whatsoever for, you know, going to war on behalf of Ukraine. And we see, we saw the recent election in the Czech Republic. Now, I don't think Andrej Babiš is exactly a Viktor Orban figure, but nonetheless, he is a skeptic when it comes to Ukraine, and the government that he will form will cut back to a certain extent the assistance that the Czech Republic has been giving to Ukraine. And we see this everywhere else. We see this in Germany with the rise, the increasing rise in the AfD in the polls. We see it in France. We see almost everywhere it's the anti-war candidates who do well, except of course where there's outright theft of the elections, yes, as happens in Moldova and Romania, which is exactly the only way that NATO and EU can pull their chestnuts out of the fire, just to steal the election outright. But the problem is that as long as you keep whipping up this war fever, well, something could go wrong. I mean, we do have the memory of 1914. There have been years and years of whipping up war fever until finally it came. So I do think this is very dangerous, but it is an elite project. It's not a popular thing. And we see, when do we see spontaneous demonstrations? We see spontaneous demonstrations on behalf of Palestinians. You know, we saw over the weekend huge demonstrations in Spain, in London, it's just throughout Europe. These are spontaneous. There's nothing, but when it comes to Ukraine, there's nothing coming from down below.
Well, Mark, this whole war fever campaign has one customer, and that customer is in the White House. Is he gonna buy it?
Okay, so I agree with George that this is it's the only ones who have war fever are the European political elite and the European media, right? They've been able to whip up the European people into fear, but that is a very reluctant fear. They don't want a conflict. They don't want to fund a regime in Ukraine anymore. So they're facing disconnect across the board from their own electorates. And then it becomes a game of democratic management, right, to continue this geopolitical project. I it's quite obvious to me that you know, Trump has undergone another one of his periodical tack to the winds or reversals. Evidently, the Wall Street Journal tells us that Kellogg and his Joint Chiefs of Staff convinced him that Ukraine is winning the war. He's openly begun a campaign of military escalation, even if it's for the moment laundered through the Europeans against Russia. There's no talk of a peace process anymore. U.S. HIMARS have been fired into mainland Russia, into Belgorod, for the first time since Trump has taken office. This takes us back to Biden-era policies that the U.S. is firing ballistic missiles into Russia. That's where we are right now. And all of this talk of Tomahawks are not going to be provided because it's not a system. They don't have the launchers, ground-based launchers for it. But they will come up with something, even if it's, you know, the German Taurus cruise missiles. Military escalation, it is all they have left. And they're not willing to walk away. I know everyone, is Trump going to walk away? Trump hasn't walked away from everything because Trump doesn't have the political gumption to go against the deep state and the media and the European elites on any issue. I mean, you know, much less Netanyahu. He will continue tacking to the wind, different people in his administration arguing different things. It's just a cluster F, his policy.
Yeah, one of these things, I think that Trump does have this, has the inclination is the, let them fight it out. And if U.S. arms makers can make a dime off of it, why not? Okay. I think it's that say, calling Russia a paper tiger and all of that, and Ukraine can win and win plus. Okay. I think that's a lot more cynicism right there. And it is a way for him to kind of not walk away, but this let it fester on somebody else's turf. George.
I think so. I think he is indeed playing this game of escalation, but that he will be able to step off when...
Yeah, and escalate to de-escalate.
Exactly. Yeah, he doesn't want a war. We know that he doesn't want a war. That's not his thing. But he thinks that somehow if he can escalate, he can apply pressure, then maybe somehow Putin is going to... come to some agreement, but it's the same policy. This is the NATO Biden policy. So it hasn't worked 3.5 years. So it's not like it to work now, but that's really his thinking. But I think it is very dangerous because I think this is what the Europeans are playing. The Europeans are whispering in his ear, oh, you know, Putin is making you look like a fool, or Putin is really terrible. He's threatening us. You know, we're in real danger. And that's all because you've encouraged him. And I think that's having some kind of an effect on him. Well, I don't want to do this encouragement. I mean, this is why this whole war fever has taken the shape that it has, is that this is the only way they can persuade anyone that Ukraine is somehow a big deal for Europe. We're under attack. Russia is attacking us. This isn't about Ukraine anymore. It's we are under attack. You know, we have to do something.
Yeah, but Mark, George brings up such a great point because this posturing has very little to do with facts that all three of us can agree on. It's all about perception management again. I mean, these stories over the last week or so, the Russian economy is about to collapse. I didn't know that, Mark.
Yeah, evidently no Russians have gasoline and there's long
queues. Well, I heard 1/4 of Russians have no toilet paper. Did you see that?
No toilet paper? Toilet? Yeah, I mean, we could debunk the routinely cycled myths economically about Russia. We could spend entire programs doing that. The Western media is a smorgasbord of disinformation and exaggeration when it comes to Russia, all across the board, especially economically. George argued, made the point that a war in Ukraine isn't Trump's thing. Well, I think we have to be very careful there because the U.S. is already involved in a war, right? The Europeans have admitted it. The Russians have admitted it. He may not want to be more openly involved if he can get his European proxies to shoulder most of the burden, but it doesn't mean that he's willing to take being perceived as taking a loss in Ukraine. At the same time, the peace president is building up a flotilla in the Caribbean off the coast of Venezuela and being quite open. You know, the New York Times is openly talking about the U.S.'s regime change plans with the opposition there under the guise of a counter-narcotics program. He's moving dozens of refueling aircraft and fighters to Qatar, which he does when he's preparing to strike Iran again. So it seems that Trump is still looking for an easily, totally not war victory elsewhere if he can't get one in Ukraine.
Yeah, and George, it goes back to the old adage that in the era of great power politics, great powers should not be fighting each other because one could lose. Trump wants to get into a situation, Venezuela, Iran, that's doable turf in his mind and many people around him.
No, that's absolutely right. And Trump is very much in the mold of past U.S. presidents, which is you don't get yourself into a war with a great power, but you do get yourself into a war with small powers because they're very easy. And then the United States has been very good at that. It's fought all sorts of wars in Central and Latin America against very weak foes. And I think that's absolutely what Trump thinks. He can do a regime change in Venezuela because that's not going to be that difficult. He tried that in the first term. He didn't succeed, but he's almost certainly wants to try that again.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Russia's a different case. It was Biden who kind of pushed America into doing something that Americans had really been very wary of before.
All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.